you ever not drinking wine out of a cardboard box, Neil Coulon. I'm happy to say that. That's for sure. That sounds awful. I'm killing my mood.
I'll tell you, I have an entire station of people who think it's great. All right. just sit back and go, okay, what time? You know, I'm just trying to get to 3 o'clock. All right, so Neil is finally here. Next week when we do this segment, it'll be crack analysis. All right, so now let's do some great guessing. So what's your great guess going in with the Steelers sitting at 24? Do they, A, stay at 24, and B, if they do, who do they get?
I think they stay at 24, and I'm going to say this. I think the player they take is not somebody we are going to often discuss leading into this. I think that the range of guys that they could take is wide enough leading into this draft that the consensus, I would say the consensus is probably Najee Harris.
Right.
I think that that's gotten the most buzz, that's gotten the most chatter to this point, and I think it makes the most sense. I think you can connect the most dots with that. I think, though, Harris is going to be gone. I think there's enough interest surrounding him by teams that have multiple first-round picks. And this is kind of the key thing here. If you look at it financially, if you've got two first-round picks, that's a pretty substantial amount of salary that you're going to have to pay. And if you look at Pittsburgh and the situation they're in, right before this call, and I think that this led in very well to what I'm saying, they announced, well, through Ian Rappaport, he reported that the Steelers have picked up the fifth-year option of free safety Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Right.
They have another fifth-year option outstanding for their other safety. No word on him. If you look at both of those players, I think it's pretty obvious. One, definitely you want to extend. The other one, I think, is probably more of a nice-to-have for where they're trying to go. If you pay market for both of them, you're investing a substantial amount of money into just these two players. Teams, Pittsburgh in particular, wants to be a bit more balanced on how they build their core roster up. And Pittsburgh has only, in this era, once had two safeties working on extensions. That was Troy Polamalu and Ryan Clark.
Right.
Beyond that, they've been trying to find adequate replacements to that, a position that they seem to prioritize sometimes, not prioritize other times. But if you look at this from, say, the New York Jets perspective, who are drafting at 23, and the Miami Dolphins perspective, who are drafting at 18, these are teams that, certainly for the Jets, are pretty much devoid of anything resembling an offensive weapon at this point.
Right.
If the Steelers have a need for a running back, the Jets have a need for a running back, and both of them are teams that Le'Veon Bell used to play on. Maybe there's a connection there. I don't know. But they don't want to pay necessarily two first round picks on extensions at the same time. Miami also has like 14 picks or whatever it is. They'd have a lot of guys that they'd need to pay. So they can pursue a running back from the perspective that maybe this position isn't fungible over a longer period of time. Maybe we can get 5 years out of him after his option. Maybe we can tag him at a pretty low rate the way running backs are going. The tag's not worth much. That's 6 years out of a running back. Maybe his career is over by that point. It doesn't really matter. If we got six quality years out of him, and we were able to build up our team in the direction that we are, the way that we have been under Brian Flores, who's done a phenomenal job in Miami to this point.
Yes, he has.
I think Harris has just as much value to them than anybody else, simply because of that. They don't need to worry so much about a long-term investment in the guy. I think the Steelers need a playmaker out of their backfield. I think Harris can fit that to some degree, but I don't think he's going to be there at 24. And looking at 9 trillion different mock drafts, I spent the better part of today talking to people about this. More and more people are suggesting the idea that maybe the Jets could snare him at 23, or maybe the Dolphins just take him at 18. But the odds of him being on the board aren't as high as I think what they thought it was going to be earlier on in this process. So with that, who do you identify if you're the Steelers? Fun fact, I think we talked about this last week, the Steelers have not drafted an offensive tackle in the first round since 1996.
Right.
Maybe they're that embittered over the Jermaine Stephens disaster that they just completely avoid the position there for this long. But that's noticeable. You know, you really can't ignore that if you're talking about the draft with the Steelers. Every single year, though, every pundit always tells me they're going to take a tackle. It's like, okay, well, when they do, I'll believe it. They don't do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who's there. They avoid it. They don't do it. And it's not as if they've had horrible play out of the tackle position in that time. They've had some really good ones in there. They just get them out of nowhere. Alejandro Villanueva finishes up his time with the Steelers after having played, I think, pretty much every position on a football field between college and a couple brief cups of coffee with teams before he landed in Pittsburgh. He ended up being a very serviceable tackle. Kelvin Beachum was a seventh round draft pick, drafted as a guard, played center first. He was a third tight end. Then he was a Pro Bowl level tackle in the year that he got in Pittsburgh. They can find guys that can play the position and they can develop them. They count on that. They do look at the interior offensive line, though. We've seen them take a center. We've seen them take a guard in the first round. That center just retired. I'm not sure if there's a center that they want at 24. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them looking at perhaps a linebacker, which isn't a position I think that people would expect. There are going to be some of them that fall. If it's not Zaven Collins, if you look at a guy like JOK out of Notre Dame, there are players who are going to be well worth the 24th pick that might not be at the most significant position of need. But at the same time, it's hard to say that you really want to trot Nikki Spillane out there again. You know, Robert Spillane is not the greatest athlete on the team. Vince Williams clearly wasn't enough for them to pay him the salary that they agreed to pay him initially. There's no long-term options next to Devin Bush right now. Wouldn't be surprised if they looked at that simply because the guys who are going to be there are going to be really good. One thing I know, they're not going to take a free safety. That's safe. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think pretty much anything is on the board here. So my extremely long-winded answer is, I don't know. I think you can go a bunch of different ways with it, but it's not going to be the guy everyone's going to expect, you know, minutes, hours before the draft.
Let's continue with the Najee Harris idea for a moment, that he does get picked by somebody in front of them, Jets, Dolphins. Is Travis Etienne, who, by the way, is getting some really good reviews, pass catcher, pass protector, change of direction at full speed, is he an option?
If it's me, I think he is an option. I like his all-around game. I like his explosion. He's very fast. You mentioned the pass catching. One thing it is interesting that you brought up as well, though, he's a good pass protector. I don't know how good Najee Harris is at it. I don't know how much you really focus on that at Alabama as far as the role of the feature running back that they have, very old-school power approach. I don't know if that's a rounded-out part of his game. I think Adrian might be better in that regard. Mm-hmm. I do think that Najee Harris, though, is a walking embodiment of what Mike Tomlin wants in a running back. And what Mike Tomlin wants in a running back might not be the same as everybody else, but it really kind of seems to be something out of the 1960s. You know, a bigger guy, his long speed isn't so much of a concern. He's got good vision. He's strong. I can probably point out 15 different short yardage situations in which the Steelers failed catastrophically because of the lack of strength that they had in the running back. Those types of things, I think you see that more with Harris than you would with Etienne. But at the same time, if you want the home run guy, if you want the real playmaker, if you want the probably better overall pass receiver, I think Etienne is your guy. If the Steelers gave him the type of attention that I think they normally would give, and maybe I'll admit I'm probably masking some of this just because Tomlin was all but rolling out the red carpet for Harris.
Right.
I don't know if they even really bothered to look at Etienne just simply because it's Harris or bust. I could see them kind of going into that mindset at 24. I don't think Etienne lasts until 55.
Right.
A name that's coming up quite a bit lately out of North Carolina is Trey Sermon. Is he a poor man's Travis Etienne? Is he somebody that has that explosive pop? I don't know if I'm convinced on that. I just know that there are people now that are saying that they might have been more interested in him. It seems like when they went down there, they focused more on him than Javonte Williams, who's the guy that I would want if they're going to take a running back. If he fell to 55 and they didn't take him, we would definitely have a lot to analyze him on the next show. I think for everything that they need in this offense and for a modern kind of spread approach offense like you have in the NFL, he's a great fit for that. Might not be as you know, the bruising between the tackles kind of guy, but he's explosive. He's a playmaker. He's a good receiving threat. I think there are a lot of different things that you can do with him. I just think overall, I don't think we need to coin a running back as the traditional 3 yards in a cloud of dust, three down guy anymore, just because you drafted him in the first round. The game is what we used to refer to as situation football. You know, the Steelers, in my opinion, when they collapsed the way that they did, they failed to close out a lot of games that they could have earlier because they failed in situation-based football, short yardage situations, third down. There was a time in which they did well with that when their passing game was working. When that stopped working, though, they could not run the ball. And that cost them quite a bit. I think it made them extremely predictable, and the snowball rolled downhill. So having a back that can do multiple things for you in short yardage, quick passing, quick handoffs, power running, zone running, all of that, you can get that from those first three guys. I don't know if Sermon is that guy or not. If that is the case, I think he's joining a backfield that's very similar to what they already have. But it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell right now with everything that they don't have access to. They don't have the same amount of medical data that they usually do. I'll say this. If Sermon was an option, a legit option, they did a really good job of hiding that. And I would guess intentionally throwing out the Najee Harris smokescreen that they may or may not think is even going to get to 24 anyway.
Yeah. All right. If we're in a draft room, and I bring this up because Gil Brandt was talking with Peter King of Football Morning in America from NBC Sports, and he brought up in the 60s they draft somebody, and they had military service. And he said he rarely came back from military service the same player that we drafted, which I thought was interesting. If you and I are sitting in a draft room, how do you view in this particular year opt-outs?
Boy, it was interesting what Kevin Colbert said yesterday. I think to some degree, and I certainly think that you and your audience is hearing something similar. What does that mean for Micah Parsons? If Micah Parsons was on the board at 24, how do you pass that up?
Well, obviously I wouldn't, because I know the guy and I know what he can do. I'll give you an example of that. And that would be Rashawn Slater. Some people would say the Steelers, what if he was available? He could play tackle, guard, whatever. He was asked to play in the Senior Bowl and refused to do it. I mean, that would be one where I'd sit back and say, okay, I'd like to have somebody who wants to play.
Primary requisite of the game. You need to want to go out there when your number's called. It toes the line of generational thinking in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think it to some degree, you're usually going to boil down major issues to two things. Money and health. I think a football player that doesn't have any real security going into a bowl game that doesn't really matter, and really in a lot of ways his draft stock is secure, you can make the argument that the backup getting a chance to go in and play might be better off anyway. That's a different decision than there's a pandemic on, I don't feel comfortable about this, I don't know if this is for me. Same thing at the Senior Bowl. Now, there are a lot of guys that back out of the Senior Bowl.
Oh, I know.
Kind of like, yeah, but in order to not play in the Senior Bowl, you have to admit an injury, which probably doesn't help you. So there's almost like an unnatural checks and balances that exist.
But at least they show up. But at least they show up and get interviewed.
I would think, for me, especially in a year, this is where I originally wanted to go with this. This is how scatterbrained I am today. I would think in a year in which there's not a combine, you would absolutely want to get to the Senior Bowl. Assuming you're invited, obviously. A kid like Trey Lance might end up, falling until the middle of the first round because he didn't get a whole lot of chance outside of one game that he played for his FCS school.
By the way, that's your FCS school.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Full disclosure. A guy like Slater, I wouldn't say that he needs to take advantage of every opportunity that he gets. But exactly to your point, comes a point that I'm going to start asking why you're not doing these things. You know, it's like, you know, it's okay. We're going to ask you to do a lot of things you might not be all that comfortable with. You kind of have to. That's sort of what this is. Or at the very least, there's no opt-outs beyond this. You're going to have to show up. Are you comfortable with that? Did I get enough time with you to say that? So Kevin Colbert's overarching point was really that we're not viewing it as a cultural decision. We are simply looking at the black and white fact that you did not play. So we have a problem with that. And I think some of that is really more the mentality for the Steelers because, well, they haven't dealt with this any more than any other team has. If they missed a year, it's because of an injury. Mm-hmm. They weren't on the field.
Right.
Did they change as athletes? Did they change as players? It's really hard to be able to identify that, especially if you didn't go to the Senior Bowl. And right. I think that's kind of the question with him. But as far as talent goes, from what we've seen, I mean, geez, top 15. You know, he's an excellent player.
Yeah, no doubt. No question.
If a guy like that was to become available to the Steelers in 24, I think they break a certain streak of not drafting offensive tackles. He's the type of guy that you would want to bring in simply for value, but that would go against the idea that, well, you know, he hasn't played. I don't know. I think everything is meant to be challenged, and that would be a very different situation for the Steelers if it's there. But I think for them, you know, I'm saying this because Kurt Popejoy, our Steelers Wire editor, he selected Parsons for the Steelers at 24.
Right.
In our network mock draft. We did it with all the editors.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised that Parsons fell to that. I think it took Kurt all of 12 seconds to make his pick when that came up. And you aren't seeing a whole lot of people suggesting that that's going to be the case. But really, I think probably it very well could be. I think he's the type of guy that if he's going to fall that far, then you know maybe it's 33, 34 overall for him. But then you're looking at a guy that's drafted 20, 25 spots lower than his talent suggests that he should. So, the common adage in the draft really is it only takes one team. So 31 teams might say exactly what I'm saying, but it takes the one team to draft him. And I think you're crazy to let him be on late teens.
Well, this is how I view opt-outs in this particular year. I view it quite simply as it wouldn't affect what I'm thinking. Now, Slater would affect me a little bit because – he was asked to do something, and nah, I'm not going to do it. Really? Okay. So that's a separate case. To me, this year's opt-outs are going to determine whether you consider next year's opt-outs. If they come in and they look like they haven't skipped a beat, then I think they do a great favor to anybody who wants to opt out next year. If some of them come in and they're struggling, then I think it puts a lot of pressure on next year's possible opt-outs because people will look at them with skepticism saying, well, this guy wasn't quite the same. He wasn't quite the same, and he wasn't quite the same. This year, no, they aren't affected, but what this year's guys actually do when the season is played may affect next year and the year after.
Yeah, I think that's the unfortunate part of it all is that you have to connect that chain. You know, you have to look at that down the line, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
From the team's perspective, they'd ask the same thing. Well, what do we do about the guys next year then? If we take or don't take now, you don't really have that option. It has to be kind of a specific thing for the player. So if that's the case, you need to look at what he's done before based on, you know, your tape, your eyes, those things. And then, unfortunately, probably, you know, shaky, incomplete medical information, especially if they didn't play. You got to wonder about all that. And there's going to be chatter. It's awfully dramatic. And that's kind of something the Steelers tend to not look at in their first round pick. Certainly in other rounds, they're not afraid of it. But when it comes to the first round, they're trying to get as steady and eddy as they can. And I think with that, it's not going to be the greatest pick. Per the fans, I don't think fans are going to be super excited about it because I think this is really going to be there are going to be several fan bases will be enraged late Thursday into Friday because I think there are a lot of guys that have some issue that a team really couldn't get clarity on passed on them in the first round. And the second round is going to be loaded with first round talent. And there's going to be a lot of steady, we know everything about this guy picks in the first round. I think the Steelers are among the most likely teams to make that sort of a decision when they're on the clock come Thursday night. And I don't know if that's good. I don't know if that's bad. But it's going to be a crazy first round. I can feel like it already. We just don't have a great sense of how this is going to go down.
Sir, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to looking back at the draft next week.
Definitely. Happy draft weekend for you guys. We'll talk to you next week if I survive.